The Takeaway is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the Henry Luce Foundation for Increased Understanding of East and Southeast Asia. Funding for Detroit coverage on The Takeaway is supported in part by the W.K. Kellogg Foundation.
We are getting reports this morning that American hikers Shane Bauer and Josh Vital have been released from prison in Iran. An official with the U.S. State Department has confirmed that release on CNN, at least. And Iranian state TV and judiciary have both echoed that news. We're joined now by Thomas Erdbrink, Tehran bureau chief for The Washington Post. And Thomas, I understand you're standing in front of the prison. Any sign of the Josh Vital or Shane Bauer yet?
No, nothing yet. And also, the Swiss ambassador who represents U.S. interests here in Iran has not moved from her car. Her car has not moved. The two Omani businessmen that are here that reportedly have paid for the bill are also still waiting in their cars in front of the prison. There's no sign yet of either Bauer or Vital coming out of the Evin prison in Tehran.
But Thomas Erdbrink, have we gotten any further details with these statements from Iranian state TV or the judiciary? Do we have details of what may happen to the hikers, whether they will be released to the U.S. or not?
Well, according to Iranian law, anybody who pays bail is free to go wherever he or she wants. And this will probably be the fact right now. Still, the Iranian judiciary gave out an ambiguous statement saying that their final fate would be decided after the final court case. Now, this could mean that the court case could happen with them being absent, but this could also mean that they have to wait for this final court case. I think they will leave if you look at Iran's law, but hey, you know, not everybody always sticks to the law here in this country.
That's Thomas Erdbrink, Tehran bureau chief for The Washington Post, standing in front of the prison in Iran where the two hikers are being held. Thomas, thank you. Also with us this morning, Nicholas Kristof, columnist for our partner, The New York Times. And Nicholas, I've been following your tweets all morning long in which you're talking about the interview that you had with Ahmadinejad yesterday.
Yeah, and the very first question that I asked him was about the hikers and, when we're going to see them. He was a little bit defensive about that. He had said a week earlier that they would be released in a couple of days, and he insisted that, that is still going to happen, that we're still in the framework of a few days, and he seemed very confident that they would be out soon. I pestered him a little bit about the question of whether he really could speak for the government, whether he was being frustrated by other people in the government, and he denied that. He said that this was in the works, but later on in the interview, he came back to that theme, and at that point he said that Iran has an independent judiciary, that he can make requests for clemency, but that it's up to the judiciary to make its own decisions. So he kind of covered himself in both ways in that sense.
But Nicholas, we've been hearing this morning that Ahmadinejad in New York for the United Nations General Assembly meeting, he's going to speak tomorrow, I believe, is facing a domestic sort of power struggle between himself and the more conservative clergy. How are these hikers, do you think, based on what he told you last night, in the middle of all this?
Well, I think that Iran took the hikers because they were looking for pawns in their relations with the West, in their relations with the United States. And we don't exactly know the circumstances of their detention, but it seems as if they were actually on Iraqi soil and then were summoned into Iranian soil and then detained and then kept. Ahmadinejad, yesterday when I spoke to him, he did not even attempt to call them spies. He defended the detention by saying that, look, any time people illegally enter a country, they're going to be detained. But he did not attempt the spy routine. But I think that Iran took them to turn them into pawns, and at this point the costs of holding them became greater than the benefits of holding them.
This entire drama with these hikers is playing out with a larger drama in Iran with, as you've referred to here, this sort of tug and pull with between the president and the judiciary and other members of the government, and, of course, the larger backdrop of the Arab Spring going on. Was he able to kind of reflect on perhaps changing cultures within his country?
We talked a fair amount about that, and on the nuclear issue, for example, I pressed him on the question of whether he really can deliver for his country, and I noted that in the past there had been a split between him and the supreme leader, Ayatollah Khamenei, and he denied that. He said that there was no daylight between them. But later on, I said to him that anybody who goes to Iran can see that young people feel a distance from their revolution, that they don't buy it. And I asked him if he feels he's losing young people. He said he wasn't, but he also acknowledged that, look, there are plenty of people who don't like him, they have that right. And so, he did not pretend that he is universally loved.
But Nicholas Kristof from the New York Times, it's interesting because there's a lot of reporting out of Tehran and out of Iran that there appears to be at least some evidence of a strong popular movement away from, as you say, this revolution that they don't feel connected to, but maybe towards bigger connections with the West. In your conversation, and we don't want to preempt it too much because we're in the New York Times tomorrow, do you get the sense that Ahmadinejad wants to deliver normalized relations with the United States as part of his legacy?
I think that one reason for the interview was that he did want to be conciliatory, and he began it in a very conciliatory note, and then he ended it in a very conciliatory note. And a couple of times he talked about wanting to have better relations. He was very pleased when I said that I had been to Iran and had really liked the Iranian people. On the other hand, when I was hounding him on human rights issues, he was quite defensive and he pushed back very hard. And I thought there was also an element of triumphalism in his tone, a sense of, look, you guys have your economic crisis. You face enormous problems yourselves. And so I think that sort of intellectually he knows that he needs to bridge the gap and bring Iran closer to the West, but I just think his instinct is very combative, very defensive, and not inclined to compromise very much at all.
But Nick, on the conciliatory thing, the conciliation thing, maybe you're the pawn here.
Absolutely. He's certainly using me and other journalists to try to send his message out. And meanwhile, we're trying to push back and shine a spotlight on a lot of issues that are kind of awkward for him, like human rights.
But we can assume that we're not going to hear when he speaks before the United Nations the same tone last year where he said the United States government might have been behind 9/11.
I just don't know which Ahmadinejad is going to emerge in that speech.
That's a good question. Nicholas Kristof, columnist for our partner, The New York Times. You'll be able to read all about his interview with Ahmadinejad in The New York Times tomorrow. Nicholas, thank you so much.
My pleasure.